Production support for Earth Eats comes from Bill Brown at Griffey Creek Studio. Architectural design and consulting for residential, commercial, and community projects. Sustainable, energy-positive, and resilient design for a rapidly changing world. Bill at GriffeyCreek.studio. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at PersonalFinancialServices.net. From WFIU in Bloomington, Indiana, I'm Kate Young, and this is Earth Eats.
Our overall mission is to grow a variety of food that is adapting to the changing climate.
Today on our show, we visit Sobremesa, a permaculture farm near Unionville, Indiana, and learn about an integrated farming system, growing food, building community, and connecting people with the land. We also hear about an aquaponics farm in a middle school, and we share a recipe for an easy-to-find wild edible. All just ahead in the next half hour, so stay tuned. Let's start with Alex Chambers and the news. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Kate. Conservation practices are on the rise among farmers, even while participation in the biggest federal conservation programs shrinks. Newly released data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's 2017 Ag Census shows fewer acres are being enrolled in the Conservation Reserve Program. Michigan State University researcher Adam Reimer says that's partly because Congress reduced the size of the program in the 2014 Farm Bill.
A lot of farmers have adopted these conservation practices probably outside of program, reflecting kind of an increased awareness that these are good for production as well as protecting environmental quality off-farm.
A recent survey of 500 Iowa farmers supports that theory. It found farmers are evaluating new technologies such as precision pesticide application for both economic and environmental potential. Schools across the country are struggling with increasing lunch debt. According to a study from the School Nutrition Association, the number of students who could not pay for lunches increased last year in more than 40% of the districts it surveyed. Schools have taken a number of approaches to collecting that debt. In 2014, 35% of schools took administrative actions, like preventing students from attending homecoming or withholding diplomas from those who don't pay. Others stamped student hands or gave them cold meals instead of hot. But with pushback against these lunch-shaming practices, tactics to pressure parents to pay off debt have shifted. While schools can use federal reimbursements to pay for the operating costs of food service, they are not allowed to use federal money to pay lunch debts. But they can use the money to hire collection agencies. A school board in Shawnee Mission, Kansas, voted this month to hire debt collectors to go after up to $18,000 in lunch debts. Many districts are groaning under the weight of unpaid debt. Schools in Denver, Colorado, saw debts increase from $13,000 in 2016-17 to $356,000 last year. Many news stories have blamed the end of lunch shaming for the ballooning debt. But Keith Fiedler, who directs nutrition services in Oregon's Redmond School District, says that's only one factor. Others include rising food and labor costs, and the fact that the USDA's income guidelines for free lunch don't account for the high costs of living in many cities. Thanks to Amy Mayer of Harvest Public Media and our own Chad Bouchard for those stories.
Thank you, Alex.
You're welcome, Kate.
Farming season is upon us. Fields, if dry enough, are getting plowed. Happy seedlings are emerging from greenhouses. Hopeful growers are still in denial about soil pathogens and pest invasions. It's a lovely time of year in gardens and fields across the Midwest. Last summer, I had the chance to visit a farm with a holistic vision, founded on the principles of permaculture. Sobremesa Farm is located in South Central Indiana, just outside of Bloomington. The farmers, Robert Frew and Juan Carlos Arangu, had a larger vision in mind when they started their farm 5 years ago. Robert Frew shares the story.
That really started with one person, and that was Lucille Bertuccio. And she was a guiding light for us in understanding the importance of land conservation and caring for wildlife and for an appreciation of native plants. So through her, we started this journey of really recreating ourselves and deciding that, hey, we could probably do something more than what we were doing with instead of just a backyard habitat, why don't we create a very large piece of land that's a habitat that grows food and has animals, and that we can also create this sense of community around us?
We love food and community. I come from a Latino culture, which is very important to be connected with people, and food is one of the best things, you know. And that's why also we named the farm Sobremesa. In my culture, after you finish eating, you stay at the table and chatting, you know, gossiping, things like that. And that's like Sobremesa, that's what we call Sobremesa. So that's why we are growing all kind of food here and connected the food with the community. So we have the market here, events, we have guests coming. Also, we thought it would be unique. We learned that from the Amish, is you go to their farms and they harvest for you there. And that's what we do here at the market. People come and we harvest for them. They see the produce and they can choose. I want that a tomato. And it's a good way because the food becomes something else, not just an item. It has history, love, sharing information, and you get to know that person that is eating your food. So it's really great.
So you haven't already harvested for the market. It's as people come, you might just go out into the garden and pick things.
Some of the things we do harvest early in the morning, but we have some chairs. So when they come here, they breathe and they wait, or they come with us. So it's an adventure, I would say. You need your time, and that we also they meet other people who are, you know, buying stuff from us here. It's an event, I would say, too.
The market's on Sunday from 11 to 6, and we open the gates at the road and put out signs and wait. I think that it's a way for people also to better connect with their food, because they meet the farmer, they see how it's being grown, and they see the entire ecology of the piece of land around the food. We wanted a central feature at the farm, and we decided, since we were both into refurbishing and salvaging things, that we would find a barn that was going to be torn down that we could rescue. So we found one up in Dyer, Indiana, and we hired a Amish crew to disassemble the barn, put it on trucks, and bring it here and reassemble it in mostly the same way that it was, with a few alterations. We got together with a sound engineer from IU who suggested that we remove one of the lofts in the barn that had originally been in the barn, and then to eventually create a solid surface floor, which would help with better acoustics in the barn, because our goal was to have concerts there and different musical events. Yeah. And really to help educate people, which again, this was part of the mission that we're carrying on from Lucille, and to help people connect with a piece of land, to understand the heritage of farms in Indiana, and in the case of the barn, the importance of conservation, of preservation, of an important piece of architecture that really roots us here.
Sobremesa also offers two lovely Airbnb spaces, and they host campers, interns, and woofers, people who travel to live and learn on organic farms. And they've connected with the local elementary school in Unionville.
They have a really an amazing idea for the whole school and theme. It's called Earth. And they have a garden. I mean, that school is amazing. And we prepare a workshop to create a mound. It's a Hügelkultur is the word that they use in German, but it's pretty much like a big raised garden using some materials you have right there on your place. And there were 60-something kids, and they were fantastic. Oh, we loved it. There was a seven-year-old who came to me, I could do this for the rest of my life. And that really was the best, yeah.
So they built the mound?
We divided all the kids in three groups. The ingredients we had was branches, paper, soil, cardboard. So they all went through the whole process. They used shovels and all tools, wheelbarrows. They work incredible, yeah. I told one of them, you're hired, yeah. Because they didn't want to stop. They went on and on, yeah.
They also hosted students from Unionville for a program called Reimagining Opera for Kids, presenting a food-themed opera in the refurbished barn. There's so much happening at Sober Mesa Farm, too much to cover in one episode, but we'll check back with Robert and Juan Carlos later in the show to hear about why they keep a special type of fowl on their farm. So stay with us. It's springtime here in the Midwestern United States. And if you're like me, you're traipsing around in the woods every chance you get, hunting for morels and ramps, and bringing home empty mesh bags and poison ivy rashes on your face. But you don't need to venture any further than your own backyard for some favorite wild edibles. Dandelion greens. Spring is the best time of year to harvest them, when the leaves are young and they haven't yet flowered. Later in the year, they can turn bitter. So seize the day and try this dish of dandelion greens with new potatoes and Italian sausage from Chef Daniel Orr.
Okay, we're going to add a little bit of olive oil. You don't need to use your most expensive extra virgin olive oil for this. It's going in at the very beginning of the cooking. You want to save your good extra virgin olive oils for finishing dishes like drizzling over pastas or using in salad dressings, because if you cook those nice green olive oils, you're just going to cook out the flavor. It'll actually evaporate into your exhaust fan. So you're just paying $16 a liter for nothing. So use your less expensive or mixed olive oil for this to get started. What I've done is I've tossed in my local sausage. What we want to do is to cook the sausage till it starts to brown. That way it develops some of the flavor. You want to, anytime you brown meat, it kind of caramelizes the proteins and the sugars, and that's where you get the nice rich flavor. All right, once your sausage has started letting out some of the fat, starting to color, we're gonna add some onions. And again, we're gonna let those cook for a few minutes. We want them to start to caramelize. The onions will release some sugar. They're very sweet, and especially during the summertime when you can get Vidalia onions and other real sweet varieties of onions. Use those for this dish because, again, you're taming the wild beast, the dandelion. I'm going to season this with a little salt and pepper. And I'm also going to add my garlic at this time. Depending on how much salt is in your sausage, you want to season that way. So taste your sausage, see how spicy it is, how salty it is, and then you can add a little additional seasoning. And the aromas are starting to really come out. I love the smell of cooking onions and garlic. They say that when you're trying to sell your house, you should either roast a chicken or cook a pot of onions, and then it will smell like home. Okay, once that sausage and onions have started to brown, you're going to add your potatoes. Now, you could do it two ways. You could either put them raw in here and then cook them a little bit longer, or you can do as I did today, and I have a selection of red, white, and blue potatoes that I've par-cooked ahead of time, so it's a little bit quicker cooking method. Okay, I also have a habanero pepper, a small little habanero pepper. Now this is really spicy, but I love the flavor of it. So what I'm gonna do to get the flavor without the spice is I'm going to add it whole, and then when it gives the flavor that I want, I can just remove it. Okay, and then finally I'm going to add our dandelion greens. I'm just kind of laying those across the top. And that almost forms a little lid over the potatoes and sausage mixture. I'm going to add a little bit of vegetable stock. And we're just going to let that come to a boil and steam for a little while. And we're going to let that stock cook out a little bit. Wait till the potatoes are completely cooked. Again, if you were starting with raw potatoes, it's going to take you 15 to 20 minutes for them to cook. If you use par-cooked potatoes, you're going to have about a 5-minute cooking time. And now we're going to add the acid to the dish. And what we want to do is create what my grandfather called a pot liquor. And that's the juice that's in the bottom of a batch of greens. And we always put a little bit of vinegar. We even kept a cruet of vinegar on the dinner table that you could add to your pot liquor and drink it at the end of the bowl of greens.
You'll find this recipe at eartheats.org. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And insurance agent Dan Williamson of Bill Resch Insurance, offering comprehensive auto, business, and home coverage in affiliation with Pekin Insurance. Beyond the expected. More at 812-336-6838. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent providing customized financial services for individuals, businesses, and disabled adults, including tax planning, bill paying, and estate services. More at personalfinancialservices.net. Sustainable agriculture comes in many shapes and sizes. In Louisville, Kentucky, middle school students are learning about one system involving fish. Producer Taylor Killo brings us the story. As promised, we're back at Sobra Mesa Farm. Juan Carlos and Robert have an integrated approach to farming. No component of the farm works in isolation. For instance, they've planted a pollinator zone near the road with native flowers attracting bees, insects, and birds. The birds keep the cabbage moth caterpillars off the broccoli and kale. Systems work together. They keep chickens for eggs, but they also contribute manure. They scratch up the soil in the garden beds and keep bugs under control.
But the ones that are totally out, working and making noises, it's the guineas.
They also keep guinea hens.
The main gift to us is they control ticks. We used to have so many here, and now we have less because of them. They wander. They can't be really contained. They're free spirits, I'd say. They even go to the neighbors, and we have to try to bring them back here.
But then do they come in at night to have shelter?
We did train them to go into a coop, but essentially their food and water, for the most part, they get out on the land here as they're wandering around and eating a lot of ticks.
Yeah, I would just think that predators would be a problem if they're out wild, but maybe they've realized that it's good to come inside.
They know that, yeah. Like last night, for example, I was busy emailing people about the market on Sunday, and it was already dark. They were calling, "Hey, come, close the door." So after I closed the door, they were totally silent. This is the house of the guineas, and now it's time for them to come out.
The guineas are black with white speckles. They're larger than chickens, with almond-shaped bodies and tiny heads colored bluish-white and red. They're quite striking. As we walked around the farm, I noticed the guineas in the tall grasses, stretching their necks to the tops of the stalks.
And ticks love to be on top of the grass, so...
So that's what they're eating. They're not eating the seeds.
Mm-mm. No.
I noticed one of the birds making a lot of noise on top of a large covered bale of straw.
Yeah, watch it, really. So they like to go on a high spot and tell the others that everything is fine, So after that, he will go there and another one will come here, another spot.
That's amazing. Yeah. They're really cool looking.
Oh, I love them, yeah. They're noisy, they are, but they're so fun to watch. The way they run, they play, it's like kids. Oh, yes. They chase each other and you think they are going to kill each other, but so they go, they're very close, so the other one, so goes back, so this one goes again, hey, no, come follow me again or chase me again. It's like they could go on and on and on. And their babies are so cute. Have you seen the babies?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. They look like a little chipmunk.
So you said you don't eat the animals, but do you eat eggs?
Oh, yes, yeah.
And what about the guineas? Do they lay eggs?
They do, yeah. They have a short period. They start like end of April until September. That's it. We collect the eggs and we sell them at the market. They're really rich, especially if you...
Are they smaller?
They are smaller, yeah. But in comparison with a chicken egg, they have a bigger yolk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not much of the white. So for baking, yeah, they're great.
Juan Carlos says the guinea eggshells are hard as a rock and light brown in color. We have photos of the guineas and a few other shots from Sober Mesa Farm on our website, so be sure to check it out, eartheats.org. That's all we have time for today. Thanks for tuning in to Earth Eats. Thanks also to the Earth Eats team, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killow, Josephine McRobbie, Daniel Orr, Renee Reed, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Robert Frew and Juan Carlos Arango at Sober Mesa Farm, Michael George, Riley Stansbury, Brianna Woods, and all the Aquapunks at Western Middle School. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young and I produce the show. We'll be back next week. Production support comes from Bill Brown at Griffey Creek Studio, architectural design and consulting for residential, commercial, and community projects. Sustainable, energy positive, and resilient design for a rapidly changing world. Bill at griffeycreek.studio. Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And insurance agent Dan Williamson of Bill Resch Insurance, offering comprehensive auto, business, and home coverage in affiliation with Pekin Insurance. Beyond the expected. More at 812-336-6838.